I have training in perinatal mental health disorders. So I'm here today to talk to you about the diagnosis of maternal mental health disorders and resources we have both locally and widely. The objectives are to have an understanding of what maternal mental health disorders are and understand the risk factors associated with maternal mental health disorders. Make sure that you look for the CME credit at the end where you'll see a QR code that you can scan. So, what are maternal mental health disorders? So, I usually describe this as we'll talk about the specific maternal mental health disorders in a minute, but basically, any from conception until 1 year postpartum, so 1 year post childbirth. Anytime during that period, if a patient is meeting criteria for any of the mental health disorders, such as anxiety, depression, PTSD, OCD, that it's during that time period. So the maternal mental health part of it is basically from conception until 1 year postpartum. And it includes overall emotional, social, and mental well-being during the pregnancy and postpartum, as I said. Mental health conditions include substance use issues, as well as any other common complications that can happen during the pregnancy and the postpartum period. 1 in 5 mothers in the U.S. are impacted by mental health conditions, and mental health conditions are the most common complication of pregnancies and birth, affecting approximately 800,000 families each year in the United States. So, the mental health disorders that I was just talking about. So we have anxiety disorders, mood disorders, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, postpartum psychosis, and substance use disorders. So those are the mental health disorders that we can see during that perinatal period, which is basically from conception to 1 year post-childbirth. The baby blues is different. It is where a mom might have, just more tearfulness, more sensitivity, emotionally, feeling more overwhelmed, maybe feeling just blah or sad, down, maybe irritable. The baby blues can affect 85% of childbearing individuals during that first month after delivery. And so when I have met with patients shortly after delivery, sometimes a mom will say, "I'm really happy and I'm grateful, I'm excited about my baby, but I keep crying and I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel so sad, and that commercial just made me cry." Then I sit down and talk with the mom and say, "Hey, it sounds like you're experiencing some baby blues." And maybe that person does or does not have, some baseline anxiety and or depression that could potentially be contributing to their emotional state. But the baby blues is basically kind of having the blues, in that first month. So it's different than a mental health disorder. So the baby blues typically includes that emotional sensitivity, weepiness, and/or overwhelming feelings. The baby blues is most likely associated with significant changes in hormones in the immediate postpartum period. So other factors that can contribute to a person having baby blues is lack of sleep, the body is healing after childbirth, and just that adjustment of, hey, we have a new baby, family dynamics are altered, even if it's the first baby or the 10th baby, it's still a new baby, another person in the family. So there's adjustment there. And we know that we specifically can know if it's a baby blues if it resolves within 3 weeks after childbirth. So, as long as it's not going kind of past that 1 month after childbirth, we know it's probably the baby blues. Otherwise, we're looking at possible, maternal mental health disorders such as like anxiety, depression, and so on. So anxiety disorders affect approximately 6 to 8% of childbearing individuals, consist of feeling stressed, worried, overwhelmed, tense, more on edge. You can have panic attacks, which can include shortness of breath, rapid heart rate. Sometimes people feel dizzy, lightheaded, maybe feel like they'll describe like chest pain. Like sometimes people have gone to the ER and said that they feel like they're having a heart attack. You know, that's that kind of like chest pain. You can have stomach pain and other symptoms too that can be part of a panic attack and anxiety. Fear of going crazy or dying can be a part of anxiety disorders. Having intrusive or scary thoughts, thoughts of harming self, or maybe even thoughts of harming baby. Fear of going outside. And then there can be sleep disturbances, such as difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, even difficulties falling asleep or staying asleep if baby is sleeping. Sometimes, you know, moms will really have a lot of ruminating thoughts maybe about how baby's doing or how they're doing that affects that sleep. You know, intrusive thoughts are very common in that postpartum period and perinatal period as well. Depression. 14% of childbearing individuals can experience depression. Depression can include change in appetite, whether it's increased eating, maybe binge eating, or maybe loss of appetite, you know, so not eating much, sleep changes, more sleeping all the time or often to struggling to sleep and having interrupted sleep, changes in energy level. Usually we see a decrease in energy, you know, that lack of motivation, difficulty concentrating. Those are all symptoms of depression. Negative thinking about oneself and or others can be part of it, feeling guilty, sometimes shame, feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, worthlessness. All of those are symptoms of depression as well. Irritability, anger, feeling rageful, lack of interest in the baby, lack of interest in others, low self-care, you know, not tending to, you know, your care. Sometimes people will appear more disheveled when they're feeling depressed. Having intrusive or scary thoughts is also depression symptoms. And then thoughts of harming self and or baby as well can are part of depression. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. 9% of childbearing individuals can experience PTSD. So change in cognition, mood, arousal associated with traumatic events that typically happen around childbirth. So sometimes we've had patients who have, you know, a very traumatic childbirth and it results in PTSD. So then, you know, I've met with these patients and we work on trying to learn more coping skills and if they're going to have like another baby, especially like trying to process through that trauma and learn coping skills so that that next birthing experience isn't going to be triggered from this the previous trauma. Avoidance of stimuli associated with a traumatic event, and then feeling on edge or on guard, those are all symptoms of PTSD as well. You know, people will often talk about certain triggers. Whether it's visual, auditory, taste, smell, all of those can be types of triggers. I've had a patient that is triggered by bright lights because of immediately after birth, she was bleeding a lot and it was an emergency situation. And so there's all these bright lights that were brought into the room. And so now when she sees bright lights, she gets triggered and ends up having a panic attack. You know, so that's an example of a symptom or symptoms of PTSD. OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. 4% of childbearing individuals can have this. Disturbing, repetitive, intrusive thoughts, which may include thoughts of harming baby or thoughts of harming self. These thoughts cause the individual great distress. the OCD behaviors are often thought to be like more compulsive behaviors, such as frequently checking on things, like maybe frequently checking on lights or locks on doors. It can be in response to intrusive thoughts or in an attempt to make the thoughts stop or go away. Bipolar disorder can affect 3% of childbearing individuals. Manic or hypomanic episodes alternate with depressive episodes. Excuse me. Unusual shifts in mood, energy, activity levels, and ability to carry out day-to-day tasks are part of those symptoms. And then I just have a note here. Women with bipolar disorder are extremely vulnerable to recurrence during pregnancy and have an increased risk for postpartum depression and psychosis. So we're often very mindful of women who do have bipolar disorder, especially if it's not being treated. We really want to be mindful and check in with them during pregnancy, but also especially in that postpartum period, because that's oftentimes when we see psychosis kind of come into the picture. Substance use disorder. Often comorbid, which means that, substance use disorder, those that have a substance use disorder oftentimes have a mental health disorder as well. That's what the comorbid piece of it is. Most frequently used substances include tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, and opioids. Women are at the highest risk for substance use disorders during the reproductive years, especially if access to mental health services is limited. Most women who use substances often decrease their use during pregnancy, and those who can quit on their own usually do so, which is the distinguishing factor between substance use and a substance use disorder. So someone who consumes, maybe alcoholic beverages and uses, alcohol, they're able to quit on their own, versus someone who really depends on that. It's addiction, that frequency is more and quantity is more. That would classify more as a substance use disorder. Psychosis, which is considered a medical emergency. 1 to 2 women per 1,000 births will experience psychosis. It is the most significant and the least frequent mental health condition occurring during the perinatal period. It increases the risk of infant death and or suicide. Symptoms can include delusions, hallucinations, paranoia, rapid mood swings, cognitive impairments, focusing and thinking about death, and reckless behavior. So suicidal thoughts as well. Maybe thoughts of harming others. Maybe thoughts of harming baby. Thoughts are egocentric, meaning they do not cause individual distress. So these are symptoms as well. The onset is sudden, usually within 1 to 2 weeks following childbirth. The mother should be under the care of a medical provider or taken to the emergency room for assessment and care. So something to be very vigilant about. Risk factors for maternal mental health disorders. So the following can put a mother at increased risk for maternal mental health disorders, including, but not limited to, poverty, migration, high stress situations, financial stressors, lack of access to health care, having had a traumatic birth experience, a history of trauma, unsafe living conditions, perhaps maybe homeless or just unsafe in general, and lack of social emotional support. If a person has poor prenatal care, uses substances like alcohol, tobacco, or drugs, those are risk factors. Other risk factors include someone who has experienced physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, someone who's maybe currently in an abusive relationship. If the person is not very responsive to their baby's cues, that would be alarming, a symptom, a risk factor. And having fewer positive interactions with their baby, another risk factor. And then if there are breastfeeding challenges, oftentimes this can be a risk factor as well, especially if the mom is really determined and it's really important to her, that can be really hard. And then if mom questions her competence, that is also a risk factor. All right, maternal mental health conditions are caused by a combination of biopsychosocial factors. Biological being the dramatic change in hormones that happen during the pregnancy and in the postpartum period can have a significant impact on mood. You know, in that immediate postpartum period that I talked about, like 1 month after birth, we see those baby blues, or you know, 85% of moms will experience the baby blues. So that's part of that hormonal change there, the biological piece of it. Psychological, some individuals struggle with changes in roles, relationships, and responsibilities that come with the transition into parenthood. We see this not just with first-time moms, but you know, sometimes it's adding that second baby. You know, now you have two, or it's three babies. Maybe there's some other changes in the family system that's going on. And social, the childbearing years often include changes in jobs, homes, and finances, which can add stress. Like I just said, you know, also that family dynamics that affects that social piece as well. External factors such as isolation during the COVID time, we saw a lot of, you know, a lot more loneliness, more depression as a result of not having, you know, others around, and all of the changes in like job and home and finances and being able to be around others. All of that can add to or increase feelings of anxiety and depression. So these are the risks if untreated. Untreated mental health conditions can negatively affect the mother, baby, family, and community. The risk to growth and development of baby, mother-infant attachment issues, and reduced breastfeeding outcomes. 75% of individuals impacted by maternal mental health conditions remain untreated, increasing the risk of long-term negative impacts on moms, babies, and families, and ultimately communities as well. Individuals can develop mental health issues during pregnancy, during childbirth, and postpartum. So most maternal mental health conditions are temporary and treatable. Great news. We have ways that we can intervene. We have ways that we can be proactive. Almost all individuals who experience maternal mental health conditions can recover through self-care, social support, therapy, counseling, and or medication. Oftentimes when individuals will go to a doctor and seek, you know, antidepressants, let's say, for depression symptoms, they will, the doctor will also encourage them to seek counseling or therapy, you know, to see a psychotherapist for that ongoing support. They'll also maybe screen them for other mental health disorders, and maybe they will refer them to a support group or for, let's see, you know, just other like support factors as well. Maybe social work intervenes too and talks about other ways to support them. Racial and cultural considerations. Women of color are 3 times more likely to experience complications during pregnancy and childbirth and die from these complications than white women. There's intergenerational trauma, such as Black women entering pregnancy and childbirth suffering the impacts of intergenerational trauma, including the knowledge that many obstetric and gynecologic procedures were tested on Black women without their consent and without pain medication. Another one can be institutional racism. institutional racism in healthcare settings contribute to Black women receiving lower quality of care, such as giving birth in lower quality hospitals, as well as being subject to dangerous, demanding, or humiliating treatment. There are multiple screeners that can be used for maternal mental health disorders. The Edinburgh Pregnancy Postnatal Depression Scale is a very common one used in hospitals and clinics nationwide, worldwide. There's anxiety screeners that we oftentimes use in our systems as well as Edinburgh. We use them for, you know, just general therapy. We use they're used in the doctor's office. They're used in the hospitals, clinics. Postpartum stressor scales. We have there's scales for many of the mental health disorders and multiple scales too. Some our system uses that maybe another system it doesn't use. But we're kind of just mentioning the more common ones right now. So scales are used to help kind of figure out what's going on with a mom, especially if, you know, they're not being seen face-to-face or they're not endorsing, you know, certain symptoms. It's really helpful to have those screeners. And then there's recommendations for frequency and timing of screeners. You can read through these. Each screener is a little bit different in terms of when to do it and how often. What we really want to do is normalize the conversation around mental health in general, and we want to not silo, you know, maternal mental health disorders. We don't want to, you know, such as like postpartum depression, it's been kind of siloed for many years, and we want women to feel comfortable and families to feel comfortable talking about it and acknowledging it. So we want to normalize that conversation as professionals. Normalizing how stressful parenthood is and validating any feelings of anxiety and depression. You can say something like the quote that I have in here, it's common for new parents to feel overwhelmed, anxious, depressed, or have intrusive or scary thoughts. Sometimes when people are struggling, they can have thoughts of death or dying. These thoughts can feel awful, and we don't want you to feel alone. We can ask all patients about their mood and if they're having any thoughts of wanting to hurt themselves or their baby, so we can find the best ways to help. Asking specific and direct questions. This is where screeners can be handy as well. They can kind of assist us in knowing what to ask, because the screeners, you know, when we're going through, like, let's just say like the anxiety screener, there's, you know, a question about like frequently worrying. If a patient's, you know, checking, coming up high in that one, like a 3, because it's like a scale of 0, 1, 2, 3, 3 being the most extreme, we can talk about that. We can say, oh, well, let's talk about this. I see that you're, you know, feeling very overwhelmed oftentimes, or you're worrying oftentimes. So that's how the screeners can be helpful. Specific questions can include, how are you feeling about being pregnant? How are you feeling about becoming a parent? Or how are you feeling about being a parent now? What things are you most worried about? Is there anyone you feel comfortable with talking about your anxieties with? Who do you have for support? Is your spouse supportive? Do you feel safe in your home? Do you feel safe with your providers? Do you feel like you're able to get the care that you need? You know, questions like that. How can we help you? Is there anything that you're struggling with? Have you had any thoughts of wanting to hurt yourself? Have you had any thoughts of wanting to hurt the baby? What are your hopes for the future? And then I have clinical mental health interventions listed. So psychoeducation, we do that in the clinics, we do that in hospitals, you know, we do that kind of across the board. We send patients home from the hospital with a packet of info The clinics provide patients with packet of info, you know, has educational materials in it for when they first go to the clinic when they're pregnant. So that's kind of always ongoing. Debriefing, having structured psychological interventions to prevent postnatal psychological problems, particularly symptoms of PTSD and depression. Some places do that. Cognitive behavioral therapy, that happens in psychotherapy sessions, that is found to be it's evidence-based therapy, so it's effective. There's other effective therapies as well. So just getting into a psychotherapist in general is very helpful. It's a very good intervention. And there's always like group therapy options. There's since COVID, we have a lot more online group therapy options. I direct patients to Postpartum Support International because they have like free group therapy, whether it's just audio or audio camera, you know, on your computer or your phone. There are local like group therapy options as well. Those kind of change, so you have to kind of check to see what's being offered at the time. Interpersonal therapy, especially effective when there are maternal mood disorders, which is found to reduce stress and depressive symptoms while increasing happiness and self-efficacy in new moms. And then another like type of group, centering pregnancy groups. So local resources, I just mentioned Postpartum Support International is the main umbrella, and then we have the Minnesota chapter, which is right here, the Pregnancy and Postpartum Support Minnesota. They have lots of great resources. We have Nations Associates. They have a mother baby support group offered in various locations, and then there's First Step Central of Minnesota, which can be very helpful. We have For I oftentimes will ask patients to, if they're open to having a public health nurse stop by their home after having a baby, just to have that check-in. The nurse checks in, you know, with the physical stuff is primary, but like also like how they're emotionally coping. And then there's all sorts of other local resources depending on where a person lives. So client resources. Postpartum Support International, as mentioned, various support groups, perinatal mental health referrals with in-center care. So in-center care, if we have patients who are pregnant, we can refer them to outpatient therapists. They can be started in our IBH clinics, integrated behavioral health clinics, where IBH can kind of see the patient more briefly before the patient's able to get into a more of a long-term therapist. If the patient is being discharged from the hospital, oftentimes they're seen in the hospital by a psychotherapist, if it works out, right? And that psychotherapist can oftentimes, you know, connect them with, you know, an IBH therapist to bridge care, or they'll just get into an outpatient therapist right away. It's great because we have psychotherapy in the hospital to see moms, not, you know, depending on when too, and depending on if the mom is willing, but we have psychiatry and psychotherapy in the hospital. So on our birthing unit and in the NICU also to provide some extra support as needed. And then we offer support obviously when moms are pregnant on the outpatient side of things, unless they become hospitalized. There's psychiatric medication consultations that our psychiatry staff provide. And then if there's more urgent or emergent care needed, we have our empath stabilization place at the St. Cloud Hospital. And then there's obviously the emergency room too. All right, just more resources and numbers. And that basically concludes our my presentation. I hope that you're able to learn a bit more about maternal mental health disorders and the resources available. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. There are a number of us able to answer any of your questions. Thank you and have a great day.